Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim. I understand you have a new microphone.
Yeah, let's see if it works.
it would be amazing, wouldn't it?
I'll blame technology if I can't figure it out. So obviously,
absolutely.
So here we are. Episode 55? I got my
55. How time flies, and 55. They just keep getting better and better.
So they say. Let's leave that up to.
I don't know.
It's like a fine wine. I don't know.
Well,
okay. Tonight we wanted to talk about this week. Of course, we observe the 50th anniversary of the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. The assassination of Robert F. Kennedy on June 5th, 1968. 42-year-old presidential candidate Robert F. Kennedy was mortally wounded shortly after midnight Pacific Standard Time at the Embassy Hotel in Los Angeles. He had just won the California presidential primary. This was the presidential election of 1968. He was pronounced dead at 1:44 a.m. on June 6th, about 26 hours after he'd been shot. Kennedy won the California and South Dakota primary elections for the Democratic nomination for the President of the United States. He left the podium of the Abbas Hotel and was exited through the kitchen when he was mortally wounded by Sirhan Sirhan, allegedly, according to the official story. Sirhan Sirhan fired multiple shots with a handgun. Kennedy died in the Good Samaritan Hospital. Sirhan Sirhan was convicted of murdering Kennedy in 1969, sentenced to death. His sentence was commuted to life imprisonment in 1972. The assassination of RFK and the circumstances surrounding it have spawned a variety of conspiracy theories, just like his brother 5 years earlier. Kennedy is one of only two sitting senators to be assassinated. The other one was Huey Long of Louisiana in 1935. Little background here. The 1968 presidential primary elections were held on Tuesday, June 4th. Results gave Kennedy the victory. I think last words were, "Now it's on to Chicago, and let's win there." Then he was escorted into the kitchen. His bodyguards, it's interesting, he didn't have Secret Service protection. His bodyguards were gold medalist Rafer Johnson and former football player Rosie Grier. In the assassination, in the attempt of Bobby Kennedy, there were five other people who were wounded. In addition to Kennedy, William Weasel of ABC News, Paul Sherrod of United Auto Workers Union, Democrat activist Elizabeth Evans, Ira Goldstein of the Continental News Service, and Kennedy campaign worker Erwin Strahl. As Kennedy lay wounded, it was reported he was held in the arms by a busboy named Juan Romero. And Kennedy reportedly said, "Is everybody okay?" Romero responded, "Yes, everybody's okay." Kennedy then turned away and said, "Everything is going to be okay." This moment was captured by Life magazine photographer Bill Epperidge. So that's kind of the official story of the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy. Of course, there's a whole lot more to talk about here. Joe, of course, I was alive, but of course, I was too young to remember this or care about it. Joe, you got a few years on me, so it's in your living memory.
You had to remind me, didn't you? Yeah, I do. And one of the great things about being my age is remembering these wonderful assassinations, Martin Luther King, JFK. I mean, I actually I remember where I was when John F. Kennedy supposedly was killed. So, you know, it's it's these things have shaped me, and they certainly traumatized me. As I've sort of started to study culture and particularly the secret society, I just buy less and less of the narration. I see more and more manipulation and stagecraft. All of the world is a stage, right? That was a line in Shakespeare, and I can just assure you that at the time of Shakespeare, you already had, in motion, an organization that was going to use stagecraft to basically mind control people and to gain control of the political system. I look at these days, I look at something like Bobby's assassination in context. And just to show you what I mean, there are always indications of the secret society in back of these events that they create. To go through a few, I mean, when World War I ended, they ended it on the 11th month and the 11th day and the 11th hour. Notice they have 33, you see. When they blew up the atomic bomb at Trinity, it's on the 33 degree latitude. And then there's a new one, something brand new, something for our listeners. No, as far as I know, no one's ever noticed it. When they're landing on the moon, just before Neil Armstrong's purported giant leap for mankind, there's this exchange just as before they touch down, and you can hear the people back on Earth, and in the middle of it, this one guy goes 33 degree. It's one of the last lines said before supposedly the thing lands, and this just. If you look at John Lennon's death, which I think probably is fake, you have The Catcher in the Rye, that Masonic code book being visible. You have, Martin Luther King before his death, which I also think was probably fake to some extent. We've talked about this. He foresees his death while he's at the Mason's Temple the night before. And then, of course, JFK is just a Masonic free-for-all. It's on 11/22. There's the 33 again. Excuse me. He's in Dallas, which is on the 33 degree. And it's in Daley Plaza, which is, the site where they commemorate the Masonic origins in Dallas, right? So you have the big obelisk there. So, Jim Morrison's death, you can see that they create the stagecraft, but they usually put a brand on it just to basically show that the whole world, the whole universe, right, is producing these miraculous relationships to numbers and places that they think are important. And so with Bobby Kennedy, the thing that I've always thought was just absolutely weird, and it wasn't until I started you said you wanted to talk about it, so I started looking at this, and the more I looked at it, the more it just becomes really, really strange, is that the very day that Bobby was shot, actually, it was the evening of, I guess he was shot at just after midnight. But that evening, he had dinner with John Frankenheimer. I believe that's the correct pronunciation. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Roman Polanski. Mm-hmm. Now, this is very interesting. And Frankenheimer.
And Sharon Tate, I believe. Yeah.
And of course, Sharon was right there. Yeah. Yeah. So you have there's a lot of connections that spin off from all this. But I want to focus on Frankenheimer because I think this is like a little bit of branding that they're doing. Frankenheimer had recently come out with a movie called The Manchurian Candidate. You recall?
Yeah, in 1963, produced by Frank Sinatra.
Well, I'll be darned. who is arranging Marilyn Monroe to meet Bobby Kennedy. See, it's all just this one big clump. It's a big clump of Masonic. Oh God, they're just of evil. And anyway, so Bobby is there at Frankenheimer's place in Malibu, and then Frankenheimer actually is one who drives him to the Ambassador Hotel. And Frankenheimer claims that Sirhan Sirhan brushed past him, and that he had a kind of premonition, which he said, he said this, I'm sorry, I can't take this, sorry, it makes me laugh. The filmmaker, instead of going to stand next to Bobby on the podium, which evidently he was invited to do, he decided to watch the speech on a TV monitor in the archway. And as he was watching, Sirhan brushed past him. And he had a premonition. He says, it was like the Manchurian candidate. I felt this shaking inside of me. Gee, these guys can see into the future. Isn't it something? It's just like a Martin Luther King, you know, like not being able to make it to the mountaintop because he's going to die the next day. So this is really strange because Sirhan basically set himself up or has been set up as an MK Ultra robot controlled assassin, exactly like the movie that Frankenheimer had created, which was based on John Marx's book about MK Ultra.
I'm sorry, you're talking Richard Condon's book.
Yes, sorry, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
But that was actually, it was all stemming from Marx's revelations about MK Ultra, and Condon got his material, or at least the overall understanding of the project, and then the last iteration was, you know, the book under the screen. But what you had was this idea of a controlled killer, right? Mm-hmm. And so now Frankenheimer creates a you know, this movie about it, which has this incredible capacity to look forward and see Sirhan's activity. Sirhan claims that, you know, he says, I was basically I must have been hypnotized. Sirhan was interviewed and studied by a Harvard Medical School professor for 60 hours. Quite shocking that he had this much time with him. And he concluded that Sirhan did not act under his own volition and knowledge at the time of assassination. And he was coerced and programmed by others. Get him Dr. Brown. And he was, Brown said, a true Manchurian candidate, using Frankenheimer's film's title. He was hypno-programmed into carrying out a violent political act without knowing it. Now, they also found a whole bunch of notebooks from Sirhan, right? Now, the notebooks had, you know, statements like Robert Kennedy must die, things like this. Mm-hmm. But they also had like a code phrase, and it was, the master says shoot on command. So Brown purportedly sees this written down over and over again in the notebooks, says it to Sirhan. Sirhan goes into a trance and starts pretending to shoot, holds his hands in front of him like a pistol, and he starts shooting round after round. Now, according to Brown, Sirhan, while he was doing it, was reciting military code for human organs. And now, in spook training, they give different areas of the body a designation. And I think that has to do with, you know, shots that they want people, snipers, to take at a particular time. And it's like a chessboard, you know, in chessboard, you have like E1, F4, you have squares, have designation. Well, Sirhan started barking out the military code for human organs, K6, K8, K3. And so Brown concluded that Sirhan had been programmed, and that shoot on command was the as in the Manchurian Candidate, where the Red Queen was what would trigger the behavior. With Sirhan, it was this phrase, shoot on command. So this all together is simply impossible to have, in my opinion, to be circumstance, right? There has to be something basically organizing all of these little details into this idea of Bobby Kennedy's assassination. Now, I've stated before that I'm very dubious about John Lennon's assassination. I've seen documentation about this guy who looks so much like Lennon. It's just rather weird. It's not clear, but my suspicions have been raised. The same thing is true with Martin Luther King. In the show we did, I expressed those that the fact that he understood he was going to die, and also his the lack of any bullet wound from a 30-06 to the head in the casket made me, just have this suspicion. With Bobby Kennedy, it would have been a lot more complicated because there was evidently so many people around. But one thing that really struck me as unbelievable is the famous picture of Kennedy. And the reason is that it definitely has been touched up to some extent. If you follow the arm of the busboy to the back of Kennedy's neck, it just doesn't work. There's just no way that the angle of that arm could be lifting Kennedy's head off of the ground. Moreover, there is simply no way at all that at that particular time a busboy would be next to Kennedy with a rosary, right? And this is preposterous. I mean, after having been shot, there would have been officials that would have been surrounding Kennedy. And if you notice in the picture, everyone is cleared out of the way so the photographer can have a clear picture. And even on the very night, there was a few people who'd received the picture, because this one came out very fast, who were wondering how in the world did they get the picture developed so quickly. So all these things create a big question mark to me. Beyond this, I don't think that the idea, like people say, well, the CIA, they were interested in assassinating Kennedy. To me, that whole dialectic is completely fake. We can talk about the Kennedy family and what I really think is, their place in the world. And I certainly don't. And I would just say, to finish my little rant here, is just that, if you look at like Trump and Hillary, you have this dialectic. It's drama. It keeps us mesmerized. And because of that, we think that democracy is taking place. I think this antagonism between the Kennedys and the deep state is just another version of this. All the world is a stage. And when you look into the background of the Kennedys, you just see the cesspool of secret society everywhere. So I don't think that the family is some kind of Catholic rebellion against, the New World Order. I think that they're just part of it. They're basically engaged in stagecraft, and we're given these lifetime actors so that we believe that there is a dialectic occurring, that we can, have hope for, one person to stand up against the side that we are opposed to. And I'll just conclude by saying, I think that one of the reasons that they would arrange for this assassination at this time, which was very shortly after King's assassination, is that it is part of MK Ultra. In other words, MK Ultra basically is this whole, traumatic mind control of the baby boomer. And you have the Vietnam War grinding up the kids with real physical horror. And then on the other side, you have sex, drugs, and rock and roll, basically taking them into this moral cesspool. And I think that why they would want to have killed RFK at this point is because he had become a hope. And so this was just another way to traumatize the boomer in 1968, to get them to, see more hopelessness, to you know, just be open more for kind of more nihilism and drug taking. So anyway, that's my my take, Tim. What do you think?
Interesting. Yes. Well, for one thing, yeah. The well, first, let's take the official narrative, just like the official narrative of his brother's assassination 5 years earlier, is ludicrous, based on the evidence available. I mean, you have a situation, same problem with ballistics, right?
Yeah.
You have many more shots than the 8 shots that the gun carried. You have a failure to really to maintain a chain of custody of evidence. From what I understand, they didn't even submit the actual or the alleged murder weapon in court. They used the gun that they used to test fire. They didn't keep track of the bullets. Senator Kennedy's fatal wound came from behind the ear. No witness puts Sirhan Sirhan behind Senator Kennedy. You have so the fatal shot had to come from someone from behind. So basically, there's much a lot of evidence to suggest more than one shooter. You have the situation of that security guard Thane Eugene Caesar, who was a Lockheed Martin contractor, who was behind him, and the police didn't bother to check his gun. I mean, come on. I know he's a security guard now, but still, you think they would check the gun. So you have all that, you had, the fact that the police seized the photographs of this guy, Scott Enyart, and kept it secret for more than 20, refused to turn them over for more than 20 years, and when they were finally forced in court to turn them over in a lawsuit in the late 80s, the photographs were miraculous, well, just were happened to be stolen on their way, because he was taking photographs, photograph one after another, and that would have captured the whole scene. So you have that problem. But I do think it is interesting is your suggestion of theatrics, and that is definitely an element here. Bobby Kennedy, if you hear even people who, the researchers who get into this and sort of scrutinize the official narrative and dig up the evidence suggesting that there was indeed a wider conspiracy involving elements of the intelligence agencies, both foreign and domestic, and these things. They also tend to, put forth this shows romantic images of the Kennedy as, again, as this family going against the system, fighting for the little guy. The Kennedy, image itself suggests that indeed there is upward mobility in this country, and the political system is open. We have democracy, and these things. That was the whole point, perhaps, in the in building Kennedy in the first place in the early 60s, with this whole idea of Camelot. And it is also interesting that you suggest that the photograph is doctored, because I believe the famous photograph of the busboy holding Senator Kennedy, right? This sort of this downtrodden, humble boy helping Kennedy with a rosary. It does suggest psychological warfare. And I do believe that photograph was taken by, like I said, a Life magazine photographer.
It was indeed, yeah.
So Time Life. So, yeah. When have they ever screwed the public's mind with photography? Yeah. And who was it that, I think it was Time Life, it was C.D. Jackson working for Time Life, that sequestered the Zapruder film and kept it out of the public's, they didn't run it for more than 10 years. I think the first time they ran it public was in 1975 on Geraldo Rivera's late night TV show. And the frames were released, I think, in the late 60s, 1970 about. And when they did that, they actually reversed the frames to make it seem like indeed he was, shot from behind. So you have all that going on. So, a lot of theatrics going on here. And the whole Kennedy image, the idea of this one man, he's bringing hope. And the same thing with Dr. King is the idea that we invest so much hope in singular individuals, people, and then they can be struck down, and the psychological effect of that, it is a form of MK Ultra mass trauma, and this is the fact that's all in public, right? It's all on television, and these things. That's a very interesting observation on your part, that the killings themselves were ritualistic and designed to traumatize the public. So it wasn't just the idea of getting one man out of the way. It's how you do it. And the assassinations themselves were an important part of the 1960s. The assassination in the 1960s, you have 1965, you have Malcolm X. 1963, there's Kennedy, the President Kennedy. In 68, you have Martin Luther King and Senator Kennedy being murdered. And in each of these cases, these are figures that are coming from the left. They're supposedly against the system. Although Robert F. Kennedy's, political background is very confusing. It's not clearly, liberal. He came up as an arch communist working for Senator Eugene McCarthy. Then he takes on the mob, and you have all that thing going on. That show going on. So to what extent, it's real, to what extent it's a show, it's a hard question to answer, because we don't know what's really real, do we? Because we have to rely on the folks of Time Life and CBS News to tell us what's going on.
We
can't be trusted because it's the Mockingbird Press. So to what extent do you trust what's going on? How much is real? How much is false?
Yeah. And I mean, I just wanted to echo your allusion that basically there's a blurring here. They're developing the pixelated media, right? It's really becoming powerful at this time. Hays Code is gone. Televisions are everywhere. The film industry is really at its zenith. And so they can start using very sophisticated mind control techniques, right? There are rumors, I haven't been able to substantiate them, that Frankenheimer was at Lookout Mountain, where the top secret military base in Laurel Canyon. It would have been logical. Frankenheimer was in the Air Force during this time, and he ended up living very close to the facility. So it's very logical. And so they're blurring things so that, on one hand you have Sirhan Sirhan, on the other hand you have the Manchurian Candidate, right? Now, I wanted to digress just for a second to point out that the assassins are clearly fake in my mind. If you look at, Kennedy, King, and, JFK, MLK, and RFK, if you look at them as a trio, which I think is, the correct way, and you look at their assassins, you've got a commie Cuban advocate with a Russian wife. You've got a white supremacist pornographer, and Sirhan, you have a Palestinian. This was not long after the Six-Day War. I mean, Tim, this is like the geek table at a fraternity rush party.
In fact, the assassination occurred on the one-year anniversary of the Six-Day War, yeah.
Yeah, Tim, good heavens, you're ahead of me and everything. But you get my point, is that these guys have been handcrafted for psychological purposes, right, to accentuate guilt, to make people dislike Palestinians, and with the case of Oswald, just to to have a deflection. I mean, I think that Oswald obviously was the patsy, and so they had to create someone who's just easy to hate and dislike, and so then they gave him these attributes. But I mean, I don't see them as these as being real people. And in the case of Sirhan, I mean, he is certainly not a real person, because he even claims that his mind was gone, that he's not real. He's just in this dream world, where he's doing this stuff. So this is like, to me, this is an analytic point, is that what we really want to do is to understand the stagecraft and the mind control. I mean, was RFK killed? I have no idea. They could have had a body double that they could have shot if they were actually shooting people. When I hear the audio tape, there is so much chaos. I mean, there is no way to know what's going on anywhere. There are just people yelling and screaming, and guns are going off. Who knows what the heck's going on? They may have put a body double in and killed him. It's even conceivable, though kind of a little far-fetched to me, that they would have actually killed Bobby. But it is possible. I mean, who knows what if there was an antagonism inside the oligarchs, you know, that was now being addressed with this assassination. Who knows? Our role as citizens is to try to understand the stagecraft, right? Is to understand these things and how they have been developed for mind control, so that we can think clearly and not be basically enslaved by all of these media tricks, you know, that they're hoisting on us. So,
It could be that, you know, they want to get rid of the guy, and also have the mass trauma that it creates, the psychological mm-hmm. warfare, the theatrics of
sure.
it all.
Sure, I mean that could easily have been yeah. that could easily have been. It could have been just as we have experienced it. They mind controlled Sirhan. They probably had another assassin, you know, because they couldn't really count on him to kill anybody in that state. But they could certainly have got him out there with a gun.
Yeah, and just to fire off. Some researchers have suggested that his guns actually had blanks in them.
Yeah, and then someone else could have killed him, and everything. You know, it could have basically just come out. As we have seen it, and then they have the trauma on the boomer, the culture, and, you know, we were all rooting for, you know, a Kennedy to come forward and have Camelot too, and the Vietnam War would come to an end, and, you know, all these good things would happen, but oh no, you know, Bobby has now been assassinated, and everything is black again. I think I'll take LSD. So, you know, that's... That certainly could have been the case, but because we don't know, I just don't think that we should waste time with kind of unanswerable, you know, these kind of unanswerable details. I mean, they're interesting to discuss, but who the hell can be sure? You know, sort of like Martin Luther King, certainly could have been stagecraft, right? But at the same time, I mean, his death, but. What is clear is that it is being used. It certainly is being orchestrated. The events are not organic. They are deep state activity. They are done for the purpose of mind control, for the purpose of particular political agendas with Martin Luther King. You know, there was clearly integration and creating him as a religious figure. With Bobby Kennedy, I think it's certainly just a trauma of the baby boomer. He was, you know, you had to have been there to experience the fervor. And I would point out that, like, the last thing that Bobby did before goes backstage is he gives what was, you know, people have referred to as the peace symbol. Mm-hmm. You know, he flashes the V, and then he walks backstage. But, you know, bear in mind that that's actually a Masonic symbol, right? That has been given to the boomer, sort of like the peace symbol is... You know, the broken cross in the same way that the swastika is. So the peace symbol to the Masonic world that incidentally, of course, Robert Kennedy's coming from has a completely different meaning. And that's why I think that when he disappears in back of the curtain, a magic trick occurs because, you see, Tim, you know, if you believe the kind of Kennedy Camelot narrative, it would suggest that Bobby Kennedy knew his brother had been assassinated, and he was going to stand up against the deep state and make things right.
That's the narrative, yeah.
Okay, so that's the idea. Well, if that is true, I really don't think he would be wandering in halls, you know, basically unprotected. I mean, this makes just no sense to me. With the kind of money that his family had and with access to basically unlimited security, there is no way he would be wandering like that through
halls. You mean having Rosie Grier and a track star as your security?
Yeah, I just don't buy this.
Well, he was just showing his solidarity, you know, with
African Americans. And I think that's kind of that's the stagecraft part of it, you know. But you know, I mean, he would have been traveling in a bubble car.
Well, it's funny. I heard the comments is after this, it was then that the Secret Service was assigned to presidential candidates. So I was like, really, the Secret Service? Did the Secret Service help John F. Kennedy?
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, if in my opinion is if RFK is real, he's in a bubble car and he's giving speeches from, you know, undisclosed areas on TV screens. You don't see this guy in any other way, because he knows, he would absolutely know that the deep state is lethal. He's going against it. I mean, he would have to calculate his chances at zero. And I mean, when you're having dinner with Roman Polanski and John Frankenheimer, you got to know a little bit about, you know, kind of the deep state evil that exists in the world. So I just think that that Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, is a lot easier for me to understand as a lifetime actor. He disappears in back of the curtain. An event occurs, which we're told is his death. But, you know, for all we know, it's either a body double or the whole thing is just chaos stagecraft, you know. I mean, it's hard to imagine because there's so many people there. You know, you'd think that how could they actually pull that off? But you have to remember, it is a controlled environment. You know, it would be possible to basically get a bunch of spooks into this area and force the events into the kind of the configuration you want, you know, have maybe even kill someone that looks like Bobby and then just whisk everyone away in the trauma and off you go. I think that, you know, that's what I would think happened if there was an actual fatality.
Well, there was, I think it was, French intelligence officer Hervé Lamar once wrote, President Kennedy's assassination was the work of magicians. It was a stage trick, complete with accessories and false mirrors. And when the curtain fell, the actors and even the scenery disappeared. But the magicians were not illusionists, but professionals, artists in their way. And yeah, but you have to look at these things. Politics is theater, and these things, and even the assassination, even the wars. In many ways, we call them theaters of war. Just the idea that he happened to have dinner with John Frankenheimer, the director of the Manchurian Candidate, the night he's assassinated by someone who appears to be indeed a Manchurian Candidate.
What's the odds of that, Tim?
you do feel like they're touring with us.
Yeah, and okay, what happens to RFK? It's all in the movie. What was the next film that Frankenheimer came up with? Was 7 Days in May, which is about like in a deep state kind of attempt, you know, with generals and things to take control of the political system, like supposedly Bobby Kennedy was, you know, like trying to stop. But then the film after that, it was before that, was Seconds. Do you know what that film was about? Okay, it was a sci-fi film where guys are given new lives. In other words, they change identities from one form to another through experimental surgeries. It's called Seconds. and I mean, if I'm right, I would think that like Jim Morrison and Bobby Kennedy have the same doctor to help them, you know, after their fatality.
Well, these people are sheep dipped. Yeah, they're sheep dipped, and the public persona is not who they are. I think most people can agree to that. Like, whether you're like a rock icon or a star or celebrity, that life isn't real. So at that level, we kind of admit that that goes on all the time, that the people you're seeing on the screen, even when they appear on the screen or on stage as who they are, they're not really who they are. We have to, you know, same thing with politicians and activists, you know, that be anyone who gets any notoriety, whether you're, if you're an entertainer or a politician, unfortunately, I think is a creation of the system. And that's right. Just the way it is, because the oligarchs control the political process. And I mean the political process, they mean everything. They mean, you know, the culture and how we get our information, what forms our habits, taste. You know, as Edward Bernays said, you know, there's a secret government, which, you know, and we read about in propaganda, where our habits, our taste, our ways of thinking are controlled by people we never know exist or not, you know of it, because it's all done through this, through media, all things that shape our culture. Politics shouldn't be any different. Politics is a form of entertainment in many respects, you know.
Absolutely. The main reason I know that the Kennedy deep state dialectic is fake is because we're aware of it.
I mean, good example is when you go like to a family barbecue or get together, and you know, if you're not talking about sports or something, the adults will talk about politics, and they'll have their chosen sides, and they have their narratives that they're understand their paradigms, and they discuss it based on their paradigms, understanding of things. And as you sit back and you'll talk about politics almost like you're talking about a movie, because most people aren't directly involved in politics or in political campaigns. So it is a form of distraction, entertainment. We have our the actors that we identify with, whether it's like Ronald Reagan, or Bobby Kennedy, the same way you identify with a Cary Grant or a John Wayne. John Wayne wasn't John Wayne. He wasn't out west, he wasn't fighting the Japanese in the South Pacific, nor was he storming the beaches of Normandy during World War II. He was safe back home making movies, which I think John Ford used to tease him about on the set, because John Ford was at the apparently. But still people identify with the imagery of it all. And it's the same thing with folks like the Kennedys. This isn't to say there wasn't a real conflict within the system, perhaps. And, they say, let's take out, as David Sanchez Morales apparently bragged that, he said, I was in Dallas when they took out that that son of a bitch, and I was in L.A. when they killed the little bastard. Now, David Sanchez Morales was a CIA spook murderer. He might just be saying that to get it out there. Is he bragging? He might be bragging. Is it true? Is it true? I don't know.
That's right. Here's the point. We don't, and we never will. It's impossible to know. What I know is that the history we have has been designed to keep us from understanding the system of genocide that we live in. That's what I know. You see, I know that when you read about the programs in MKUltra, when you decode the Masonic symbolism around some of these purported assassinations, when you look at basically the whole trajectory of Europeans since for like 150 years, all of the hundreds of millions of people killed with these wars that stem out of these fake and manipulated narrations. I know that what we need to do is to basically not let these things affect us. In other words, in the case of Martin Luther King, this created guilt in whites, it created rage in African Americans, and it helped propel integration, which had been weaponized into American culture. Mm-hmm. Okay. With Bobby Kennedy, it adds to the despair, the despondency of that was in, gripping the baby boomer, because on one hand you have turn on, tune in, drop out, drug use is just rampant. And moral debasement is basically celebrated. And then on the other side of the pond, you've got the Vietnam War. And then people from that meat grinder are coming back into the boomer culture, and the person who's supposed to be helping us out of all this, Bobby Kennedy, gets killed. So the normal response is to basically have some kind of despair, I think, is really what they're trying to achieve. Well, the fact is, the right approach is to understand that these things are just a bad movie. This is a really, really bad movie. In other words, it's bad in the sense it's damaging, it's designed to hurt you, and it's bad in the sense that it has no reality as kind of a dramatic structure. There's nothing real about this. So we shouldn't, have this horror when John Lennon is assassinated, and then, the guy who supposedly kills him is holding Catcher in the Rye, right? We should understand that what we're seeing is a Masonic maneuver. It's stagecraft, and it's designed to affect us in a certain way. So, with RFK, my question is like the Kennedy family, are there indications in the family that we're dealing with basically lifetime actors? In other words, when you look at like RFK's father, Joe, what do you think, Tim? Is that a sincere Catholic individual who was just very good at business? Or is there something else going on there that we should be aware of that can help us with our thinking in terms of RFK?
Oh, ask Gloria Swanson. Apparently, he used to buy her gifts with her money.
Yeah. I've heard the story.
Yeah, he bought what? Well, yeah, he what? RKO Productions, right? Movies. So there you go. He's, yeah. He's in the movies and theater and these things. You know, it was a. I guess he came up through the ranks bootlegging, organized crime, working with the crime syndicate, people like Lansky and these folks. The Jewish mobsters, and he converts his personal force into political power. He gets in the stock market. He's the first chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission, and he yes. made millions off the crash.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you know the story, but this I actually checked it because I was wondering. I've heard it, but I didn't know if it was real. I didn't want to talk about it if I didn't have some kind of citation. I'm pretty loose with citations. I know I don't necessarily have to have it wired down before I would talk about it with you, but I was curious about this. And it is actually a fact that FDR, when he appointed Joe Kennedy to head the SEC, he was said, "Why are you putting a crook in charge of the SEC?" And he goes, "Well, because to catch a crook, you need a crook." And that was the rationale. But Joe Kennedy, remember, he was the ambassador to England.
That's right.
And this was before the war. And you know, there's this fake dialectic, you know, to use an expression, that Joe Kennedy was opposed to, you know, the war that was going to come. And he was like a voice of reason, sort of like, you know, Robert Kennedy was opposed to the war. But the
That's
fact
right. I think John F. Kennedy has some nice things to say about the American First Committee, too.
Indeed, yeah. But if you look at Joe Kennedy, he got involved in a scandal. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but what was the guy's name? Name was Kent. Gosh darn it, senior moment. But so problem where someone that was working for Joe Kennedy, his name was Tyler Kent. Tyler Kent. And so he worked in the U.S. consular service. He was underneath Joe Kennedy, who was the ambassador. Anyway, he found this Kent character found that through because he had access to secret documents that Joe Kennedy and Roosevelt were secretly maneuvering the U.S. into World War II. And so Kent then took 1,500 pages of secret document, and he was trying to get the public to know about this stuff, to expose the conspiracy. But he didn't make it, and he got arrested. And in order for an American citizen to be held, Joe Kennedy basically had to revoke his diplomatic immunity, which he did. and then he took control over the whole narrative. Joe Kennedy, he concocted this BS story that Kent was a Nazi spy. Kennedy went on a speaking engagement around the U.S. saying, you know, that he was against the war. But the fact is that had he actually been against the war, he had a perfect opportunity with the material that Kent had, you know, had stolen to really spill the beans and to could have changed the whole course of world history. It would have been incredible to have brought that out because the documents, which have not been, as far as I know, publicly released, but have been described by people who've seen them, make it quite clear that Roosevelt was basically, you know, working with Churchill and with Joe Kennedy in terms of public opinion to basically create the war. And so that they were basically And so the point is that the Kennedy family has this background. It's not just, you know, with Robert Kennedy and supposedly trying to be opposed to the Vietnam War and then being struck down. It's actually the family is deep state. And I would just, you know, say if you look at the business success, criminal success of Joe Kennedy, Tim, it doesn't look to me like it's, you know, this is a normal process. I mean, the wealth creation looks like he's on the inside. He's getting assistance. He reminds me, if you look at kind of the trajectory of the Kennedy wealth, it reminds me of the Rockefellers. It just sort of, you know, there's some criminal activity. It doesn't seem too serious, but all of a sudden he's got, you know, $100 million. He's owning studios. He's the head of the SEC. He's just becomes this enormous player. It's like he was just pulled on as a spook for the deep state. And he comes from a family that has a background. If you look in the Kennedy family background, you'll see that the family is very Masonic. And in fact, one of Joe Kennedy's daughters actually married an enormous big deal in Freemasonry, a British noble in person. So Joe Kennedy was in this the Knights of Malta, which is the American side of basically Scottish Rite. And I think that he was, you know, the circle that he ran with and that really propelled him into wealth comes from what's called the Pilgrim Society. I don't know if you're familiar with that, yeah. But he had been made a member of this. And I mean, just as an example, you know, the Jekyll Island meeting where the Federal Reserve was created, you know, which you had Warburg, Davidson, Aldridge, Strong, and all these guys. These are all pilgrims. They're all members of this little society.
Yeah, it's an odd place for an Irish Catholic.
A little strange, yeah, exactly. And you see, one thing I didn't know, I was quite amazed at, is that Jackie Bouvier, you know, the Jackie Kennedy, that her sister married Radziwill, Prince Radziwill. And this family is purportedly the one which created the Order of St. John, which is basically the Knights of Malta. So that's kind of the whole circle then when you have Joe Kennedy as a Knight of Malta and Jackie Kennedy.
We talked about this in the past, that the Bouvier family, Jackie Bouvier, as a little girl, sat on the knee of George de Morinshield, who was a friend and a business associate of not only George Bush, but apparently was the middle-aged gentleman who squired one Lee Harvey Oswald around Dallas in the summer of 1960, late summer of 1963.
Yeah, I didn't know this. You brought this up a couple of years ago.
Think about that. You have an associate of the alleged assassin of John F. Kennedy being a good friends with the wife of the failed president.
Yeah, I mean, it's an impossible relationship to have been anything other than, you know, you're dealing with a constructed society. These aren't just humans running into each other.
Yeah, it's, you know, and so how do you reconcile that, you know, with the official narrative? You really can't.
It's impossible. With a constructed society, it's all there is to it.
And no, same with the Kennedys. Their role perhaps is to convince Catholic Americans that there's a place at the table for them. So this sort of builds the loyalty. This promotes Americanism within the Catholic community, because Catholic community, they're kind of a separate group. They're kind of not part of the elite or part of the Protestant America, which is America, Protestant Masonic America. And so the Catholic, you know, the Catholic Kennedy clan presents this image. And you're right, his business success suggests that he had some sort of connections. Of course, well-known organized crime, these things, banking, So he's able to, you know, get his children in the politics. At the same time, you're like Robert F. Kennedy and these guys. Robert F. Kennedy, he's a Cold War, he's out to get the commies in the early 50s with McCarthy and these things. And so is Kennedy. And the peace lover, Robert F. Kennedy, you know, the peace candidate, Robert F. Kennedy, 68, is also the one who was really gung-ho going after Castro. And, you know, he's the one that took over Operation Mongoose. Now, people have said, well, that's Kennedy's attempt to get control of the programmer. So there's ways you can spin this. And I don't know to what extent maybe they were trying to rein it in a little bit. And there's probably elements within the system that do want to rein it in a little bit or want to take it in a different direction. I'm sure there's debate within the ruling elite and within the political class, but it's always within the arena. This whole sort of narrative and this presentation of the Kennedy family, and people still take a very romantic view of the Kennedys, particularly Robert F. Kennedy and John F. Kennedy. There's books written about what would America be like if Kennedy hadn't been assassinated and these things.
That cracks me up. Yeah.
You know, but really, when you look at if you take into consideration the secret society and the oligarchs and these things, it just wasn't in the cards. And the whole how it played out wasn't like it could have played out any differently. It was scripted to play out that way. And that's the role of the assassinations. It's the role, you know, the whole point of being anti-war. Ironically, you're playing, if you're against the Vietnam War, you're part of the dialectic. You're still
that's right,
because obviously they're looking for the reaction to that, and that's what the more anti-war movement was about. So we can't look at the assassinations. We can't look at the music of the culture of the era. We know that much of the culture was fabricated or designed by the oligarchs, by MKUltra itself. We know, I mean, you've done your research regarding the Grateful Dead. Jerry Garcia was a CIA asset, you know.
Yeah.
Just getting back to the Kennedy case itself, you just look at the trial. If you believe in the official narrative, the story that Sirhan, a lone nut, assassinated Robert F. Kennedy at the Ambassador Hotel because he was mad at him about his policy regarding Israel. Look at the trial. Sirhan's lawyer, Grant Cooper. If we're a system of law and procedure and these things matter, Grant Cooper had a federal indictment hanging over his head. That itself is grounds for a mistrial.
Of course.
But he had been caught up in this Friar Club scandal where apparently Johnny Roselli, of course, ties back to Cuba and Robert F. Kennedy and Moncas. All these mobsters were reportedly involved in trying to get Castro. To the extent that that's a true narrative, that's probably largely theatrical, I believe, too. But Johnny Roselli apparently had planted grand jury evidence or testimony in the courtroom of this lawyer, Grant Cooper. And I think a bailiff or a judge notices it, says, ha ha. And this is grounds for disbarment because he has possession of sealed testimony from a grand jury. Well, the idea is someone placed it on his table and put it in his papers. But nevertheless, now they have something hanging over him. Lo and behold, he's picked as the attorney for Sirhan. And he proceeds to give a horrible defense. Good things like he doesn't bring up the questions of ballistics or the fact that the police admit that they can't even determine what bullet, who fired the bullet that killed Senator Kennedy, which is usually an attorney would say, okay, fine, release my client. You have no proof then. He said, that's not a problem. I just buy your narrative. And he lets Sirhan testify. He puts him on the stand where he impeaches himself, you know, talks about how much he hates Kennedy and these things. But the fact that his defense attorney had this indictment hanging over his head and that the trial was allowed to proceed shows that what a charade it is. I mean, that's just what, you know, it's like, no, you get an attorney who isn't under the threat of indictment. And of course, when he does proceed to give this rather weak defense of his client, admits his guilt, by the way, he only gets a fine. He's not even disbarred.
Yeah. It's stagecraft.
I know.
It just boils the blood of the boomer that want to have, more kind of clarity as far as what went on. I mean, And of course, it leads to all of the whole MKUltra stuff, which is obviously deliberate. Mm-hmm. I mean, you cannot have Bob Kennedy having dinner with Frankenheimer and before this purported event, and have Sirhan Sirhan as an obvious sort of MKUltra cutout, and not have this after narrative concerning MKUltra robotic assassins as has been deliberately created.
It's like finding out. It's like finding out he went clubbing with Charles Manson the night before or something.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. I mean, so it's just a. This has all been orchestrated so that we would get to the idea that MKUltra is creating robotic assassins. That I think that the point of distraction that this was created for is so that they don't recognize that the real purpose of behind MKUltra per se is the creation of the whole counterculture and the creation of the mockingbird media. And it's the mind control of the entire population,
and the creation of the reaction to the counterculture, which is
exactly which is all part of the
majority.
System.
Yeah.
So you can see that these things are very precisely thought out. It isn't, you know, you're not seeing just, you know, happenstance, even in the sense of, you know, the deep state just kind of maneuvering here and there. I mean, this is really, really deeply thought out, and so, you know, our role. That is us and the people listening to us, is to help the public recover from this shattering of their ability to think clearly by the insertion of the fake history.
Well, you know, if Bobby hadn't been killed, he would have been elected president in 1968, and the Vietnam War would have ended in 1969 instead of 1973, and he would have brought all the troops home, and all that money would have been spent on more HUD programs, community block grants. Appalachia would have been developed, would have been schools in Appalachia, and racism would end in these things.
It would have been a workers' paradise.
Yeah.
I mean, just like the one that Marx created.
Yeah. And that's another thing is the, again, a lot of the sort of this dreamy vision of what it would have been under the progressive politics, that was being advocated, at least on the domestic, whether it's, you know, Martin Luther King's march, you know, poor people's march on Washington, D.C., or Bobby Kennedy's idea of uplifting the poor in Appalachia or in Chicago in these slums. It doesn't address what's really going on in the country. It's all the psychological war for MKUltra, the sexual revolution, these things. That's the problem with that era of politics. Even the Kennedys is sort of that generation of Catholic politicians where the higher they climb the political food chain, the more of their Catholic identity they lost, and they sold out to the system. They're not addressing these things. The problem isn't the problems to society aren't going to be solved by, you know, national politicians promoting national solutions. Because the problems aren't national, right? I mean, the human condition, the problems people have in their lives cannot be solved by government programs, alphabet soup agencies. And if you look at the secret society and the oligarchs, these agencies are completely malevolent. They're utilized,
and they're completely organized internationally.
Yeah, it's like NGOs and these things. Like it's like right. Expecting NGO to go into like Ukraine or go into Hungary or something, or some George Soros organization, because it's named Freedom Open Society, that this is a good thing, or you know. Look what Sergeant. Well, hit my new microphone.
There you go. It still works.
Sergeant Shriver. Okay, yeah. Sergeant Shriver. Yeah, Sergeant. This is his. What he did when he was head of the Equal Opportunity Commission. What was it? It was the Office of Economic Opportunity.
Yeah.
Okay, you need a federal office to provide economic opportunity. His agency gave out almost $1 million. To the Blackstone Rangers in Chicago, I think it was Chicago.
Oh, Chicago, yeah.
Yeah, to more or less create havoc, to create white flight.
Sure.
To fund
basically street gangs to drive the.
The polls, I guess. I guess, the
ethnic Catholic neighborhoods to the suburbs where they would disassociate, lose their ethnic identity, and then be vulnerable for the. white middle class, sex, drugs, and rock and roll on.
So all that was going on, and no politics.
And this was Shriver. This was an insider, supposedly.
This is a Kennedy, right? This is a Kennedy more because
family.
Eunice Shriver. Yeah. Maria Shriver's father, right?
Tim, I'm glad you brought that up because I think there's nothing more revealing about the Kennedy family per se and their purported Catholicism than the fact that Shriver was in back of this deliberate destruction of Catholic ethnic neighborhoods.
Yeah.
This shows you, in my mind, it's just completely clear that the Catholicism that they represented is fake. That it is it's a Catholicism with an asterisk, and the asterisk is secret society, Masons, Pilgrim Society, and one fact.
Well, like Casey, another Knight of Malta, right?
Yeah, exactly, another Knight of Malta,
another head of the SEC.
Right. Gee, I mean, they're so good to us, you know, these Gentile heads of the SEC.
CIA. See how you progress?
Well, it's wonderful. Right. So it's all the same thing. But so the thing is that Bobby Kennedy, and I had heard rumors about this, but because, you know, we had said we wanted to talk about it, I did a little bit of research and I was able, I think, to get really good citations on this. Bobby Kennedy not only attended Bohemian Grove, but he gave speeches there on two occasions. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Yeah, Bobby Kennedy at the Bohemian Grove. Now, you know, okay, Bohemian Grove, it's another dining, you know, different ways of looking at it. Maybe but the straightforward way is that the real allegiance of the Kennedy family is not to Catholicism or ethnic Catholics or Irish background, it's to the oligarchs. This is where they come from.
Yeah, look at Senator Kennedy's support not only for abortion and feminism, but also for unrestricted immigration.
Yeah, absolutely. See again, he has this veil of modernism. Look how modern Catholics are. But
that was Edward Kennedy, his brother. Yeah.
Yeah, but the Kennedy family.
Yeah.
Right. So then you end up with a Kennedy being modern, being avant-garde, and it just, you know, it adds to the confusion of the overall sense of morality the Catholics have. Well, I guess this is the avant-garde because we certainly can trust the Kennedys, you know, even though the family is a complete moral cesspool that seems to produce nothing but whoremongers and criminals. But we have Camelot. I wanted to I was looking at Jackie Kennedy because I think she's fascinating. I think she's definitely a spook and a lifetime actor.
Was she married to Aristotle Onassis? Remember?
Yeah, of course. I mean, good heavens, you know, he's another oligarch individual. But so she wrote a poem when she had gotten married to JFK during her honeymoon. And it's very short. She wrote, it's about JFK. He said, he would find love. He would never find peace, for he must go seeking the golden fleece. Now, I mean, what the heck is she talking about? Maybe the golden fleece is like some kind of sexual device. No, it's on the honeymoon. I'm making a joke here. No, the golden fleece, see, to Jackie O or Jackie, Kennedy, this is reference to an order of Freemasonry, and you know that this is correct because, see, of her sister's marriage to the Razawell royal family, because this is where the golden fleece is. If you Google it, you'll see, and Freemasonry, you'll see it. It links right into it. So Jackie knew that JFK. Was secret society material, and he was going to be basically, in motion. He was never going to find peace. They had plans for this kid from the very beginning. Okay, it's cryptic, but I would argue that there is just no way that, the sister of Lee would not understand the golden fleece in the context that I'm suggesting. And this, if it is correct, my interpretation, then you can see that JFK is a very, very early on lifetime actor. And that's why His books, you know, like he wrote a couple books, Wild Britain's, Why Britain Slept, and then the
Why England Slept, yeah.
And Why England Slept, and they wrote another one about the PT 109 thing. They're pretty terrible books, but they were.
Were they written by Ted Sorensen?
Sure, but the fact is, they were wildly promoted by Time Life.
Yeah,
and
his,
Loose.
His Profiles in Courage. Yeah, remember that.
Right. Profile in Courage. So the point is that JFK is being maneuvered into the public eye. Just like, you know, he's like Obama. I mean, it's just an obvious spook cutout. The publicity is just, or Gloria Steinem, you know, they have the lifetime actor character established. They have enough training with the individual that they can now roll them out for the public. And then the publicity mill just shows you it's a direct pipeline, like the Beatles or Gloria Steinem. You know, you get the publicity mill in a straight line right into our minds because, you know, thanks to Wilbur Hayes and you know, all of these other contraptions, they have this electronic system right into our minds. And so, lo and behold, here comes, you know, John F. Kennedy. In fact, I was thinking about this, that, you know, you have the Beatles, right? But Kennedy, in many ways, is like one of the very first kind of idols that the media was able to create. You know, they didn't have enough, you know, kind of media saturation until after World War II, when they could get rid of the Hayes Code and they had all of the, you know, TVs started to be put everywhere. And so you have the Beatles, but before that you have JFK. He really was kind of an idol. In other words, he was good looking. He was, you know, you have pictures of him with his shirt off with young girls hanging all over him. So he was basically, I think, kind of, you know, the first rollout of the, you create someone who has enormous attractiveness, you know, and they're creating this. And it's with the idea that they can then kill him and traumatize people later on.
And install Lyndon Johnson, the complete opposite in office.
Right, yeah. So
this elephant.
Yeah.
In office.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow, yeah. Yeah, it's, you ever thought, you know, the whole idea of the Kennedy curse and the role that plays
I don't know. What do you think about that? I mean, like, it does seem like they're a family you don't want to be, you know, that has terrible things. But if you see, if they faked like JFK, you know, I mean, I was looking because after the RFK thing, and when I started looking at it, I was going, man, this sure smells bad to me. You know, it's right after Martin Luther King. And there's so little forensic reality to his death. You know,
yeah.
You have these bizarre pictures, you know, and you listen to the audio tape, it makes no sense. And of course, the idea of he disappears behind the screen for a little bit and then pops up, you know, in the pantry where he gets shot. I mean, he's easy. It would have been trivial to put a body double in if they want to kill somebody. So I just started having doubts about the whole thing. And, you know, it's... It takes you back to even like JFK, you know, was that real? You know, I know we have the video, but, you know, it's easy enough to put a body double in there if they want to actually kill someone, or because there is just, when they can control the environment and they control a video stream, and then, you know, when the Time Life has control of the films, Tim, there's just no reality here we can, like, trust, you know. It's just a movie. It's the Manchurian Candidate.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. To what extent is this theater, and it is presented to you as reality? All all dramatic portrayals of theatrical productions are presented on stage as a reality. It's just that when we're aware it's a theater, we suspend our disbelief. To question when it's presented as reality, on, you know, or pixelated reality, it's a question of what extent. What we're seeing is, well, I mean, we all kind of know that it's fake. You know, politicians are fake. We hear that all the time. They, you know, it's not real what they say and their rhetoric and these things. So, to what extent do you extrapolate from that and say, well, how much of it really is fake? You had the you know, the strange death of John F. Kennedy Jr., right, in 1999?
Right. Well, sorry to segue into something weird, but you've got Roman Polanski, right, having dinner. Okay, so you're going to have the Manchurian candidate execute Bobby later on, right? But you know how they love to, like, leave little clues and stuff? Mm-hmm. Well, Manson, of course, you know, kills Sharon Tate purportedly, you know, so you have this horrible slaughter. Well, who was living with Manson's group but Angela Lansbury's daughter?
Yeah.
And she was the lead spook and Manchurian candidate.
And the gun that was reportedly used at Cielo Drive was once owned by Ronald Reagan.
And then the gun comes from Ronald Reagan. And so you've got, gee whiz. It's,
who's then the governor of California? But for some reason, right. that doesn't get reported.
aren't there more than 50 people in the world? I mean, it just is. It just seems like, you see, the thing is that I'm glad we're laughing about this. And I hope that, like, people who listen to us have the same reaction, because, you know, it is horrifying. You know, this story we're given is supposedly reality. And it's horrifying that people would actually use something in such an evil way. But once you get past sort of those facts, it is funny. I mean, to me, when I was, like, looking at the whole Robert Kennedy thing, after a certain point, I just started laughing, because even if someone was killed, I just couldn't imagine that, you know, that they would actually, unless, like, as you say, there was some kind of oligarchic battle or struggle that we have no idea about. But it doesn't really matter, because the fact that this is given to us as, you know, an important component of our ability to understand American politics, this is funny. You see what I mean? This is hilarious. This should be just understood immediately as stagecraft, immediately as propaganda. And if you have that perspective, then you can just laugh at this and hopefully go on and you know, have rebellion and organize a rebellion and you know, understanding that the first thing we're going to have to do to create it is to recognize stagecraft when it, you know, is being given to it.
Yeah, and of course the Ambassador Hotel was demolished a few years ago, and now they I think it's Robert F. Kennedy High School.
Yes, it is.
The site where it is. So yeah. They paid tribute to him.
Yeah, I mean, of course. I mean, they have Roman Polanski Elementary School is right across the street.
Yeah,
now.
Elementary School Daycare Center.
Where they study transgenderism and pedophiles.
I mean, what part of the reason, again, with these assassinations, it's to create a pseudo religion behind these people. Yeah. Is they're martyrs, so their politics is martyred, and you know, with Martin Luther King, you have the civil rights movement becoming, you know, sort of sacred ground, and if you're in any way critical of the laws that were passed or you know, policies that were pursued in the name of civil rights, then you're obviously a unreconstructed, you know, aspiring slave owner, Confederate racist, you know, retrograde.
Yeah, and remember, they're going to really pump up immigration from Latin America, and so they create the picture of Kennedy who was working with Cesar Chavez to create, mm-hmm. supposedly he's going to give a workers' paradise for immigrant workers, right? That was one of his major political cohorts, right? Was basically Latino farm labor with Cesar Chavez. You may not remember this because this is...
I remember Cesar Chavez, but he was a completely controlled figure.
So this was like a huge deal, part of, you know, Kennedy's success in California. And so then when you come to the picture, you've got basically a Latino-looking busboy, right? With a rosary. I mean, it's just the imagery is. I mean, it's actually moving, but it's also has to be just complete theatrical, right?
Well, it's too moving. I said it's almost like, you know, Time Life would take these pictures of, you know, President Kennedy looking at his daughter, you know, in the bassinet, you know, and jogging on the beach with a dog behind him with the kids and these things and. Even the that very touching photograph of John Kennedy
Sure.
Jr. saluting his
Better option,
father,
yeah. Supposedly saluting, yeah.
saluting this, he's completely manipulative. I mean, it's
Yeah.
that for they slaughter the guy in public supposedly, and they have this public. Even the bodies go on tour, I mean, it's a little. I just it just strikes me as a little. It's just strange or perverse,
It is.
to do that. They did the same thing with Lincoln in 1865.
Yeah.
It was,
Another Masonic project, you
yeah.
know. And so look, here's, you know, I mean, RFK is a great portal, you know, very great portal
The
because
eternal flame, the eternal flame, or
yeah,
the
the
national
eternal flame
flame.
for JFK. But if you look at, you know, the Kennedy family as a Masonic family, family of spooks, family of lifetime actors, a family basically used for stagecraft, JFK is the first movie idol that comes off the screen and walks into the real world. And his life is just a really bad movie. If you understand that, you know, the real Kennedys, they're whoremongers, right? I mean, the relationships with Marilyn Monroe, again, and even though it's like the thing with Marilyn Monroe, who supposedly, you know, was having sex with both JFK and RFK. And then, of course, she's been linked back into the MK Ultra, you know, where she's like a robot kind of
Well, it was
creature.
Frank Sinatra and Johnny Roselli who were kind of farming her
Yeah.
out, right? I think
Yeah,
that's how
I
it
mean
happened.
they were like the handlers of her and they, I mean,
I think Johnny Roselli, Frank Sinatra found out that he, again, there's different grades of of people involved in this world, and Frank Sinatra wasn't quite like Johnny Roselli, from what I understand. But Johnny Roselli apparently drugged and raped Marilyn Monroe. And that upset Frank. This is what I read. I don't know if this is true, so you might just know the story. And that's what really created a divide between Frank Sinatra and Johnny Roselli in his later years. But Roselli, I think, wasn't he the one that the Godfather story is based on? That he's the Cohen, the director, that didn't want to give Frank Sinatra the part From Here to
that's
Eternity?
what I my understanding is, yeah.
And Johnny Roselli was the one who. Put the horse's head in his bed, I guess you could say. It's made some sort of threat.
An offer he couldn't refuse,
An
you
offer
know,
he couldn't
basically.
refuse. Of course, Roselli is the one that turns up dead in a barrel floating in a Miami Bay in 1976, during the reinvestigation of the House Subcommittee on Assassinations. That's when there's this flurry of deaths and Sam Giancana, Johnny Roselli, George DeMoranshield, and these things. So there's, again, it's one of the things we don't know exactly what's going on. All I know is there's bodies piling up for some reason.
There's
Witnesses,
just bodies. It's basically it's the Godfather. I mean, it's just, you know, they're and the poor public is, you know, we have horror films, gangster films, and then our a political life is a horror film too.
Well, one thing because we look at
And
this stuff, what's even with the official, just how the political world intersects with organized crime and entertainment. Frank Sinatra is a good example. Johnny
yeah.
Roselli and Joe Kennedy, the Kennedys, and these things. How Joe Kennedy, I think it was Frank Sinatra that fronted for the mob in Las Vegas, so they could own casinos and these things for Joe Kennedy. And so, and all, how the Kennedys won the election, Illinois, that was, with voter fraud and these things. And so it's all very seedy and dirty. And then, people look past that. Then they think you can pursue progressive politics through seedy and dirty, corrupt means. At the same
Yeah,
time,
yeah, yeah.
it's also p promoting a form of centralized, nationalized politics, right? Like a country as big and as wieldy as the United States can be governed by these few elites, and
Exactly.
good can come from that. And I just don't think it can,
Right. Good will never come from it because they're completely malevolent, determined to genocide particular populations, and if look, if someone wants to do good, they're able to do that in public. in public scrutiny. They don't need to be a member of Bohemian Grove, the Pilgrims Society, or the Freemasons, or American Jewish Committee, or B'nai B'rith. You don't need secret organizations if really in your heart you actually want to do good.
Well, a good example is, again, mentioned earlier, I think it's an important point, is Sergeant Shriver has headed one of these alphabet soup agencies, the Office of Economic Opportunity, dispensed almost $1 million to a black gang to chase white folk out of their neighborhoods. Whites out of their neighborhoods in order to break up the ethnic Catholic neighborhood, change the politics and these things. It wasn't for integration that he did this. That's complete malevolence. Same as community block grants that were taken by these.
The thing is that Bobby Kennedy knew this, obviously. They know exactly what was going on. If Bobby Kennedy was really someone who was, an altruist, or even someone who was just fair, he would have mentioned something like that. He would have had a public disclosure or would have had some kind of change of relationship with Shriver.
Or the fact that he was moving towards it. Obviously politics was different back then, but the idea of government support for contraception and eventually abortion, which the Kennedys endorse, are targeting the very group that he's supposedly helping. I mean, if there's any truth to the term the strength in numbers, these policies are meant to thin those numbers.
Exactly.
How is this helping these people? It's not.
If the Kennedy family are Catholic, why aren't they defending the Catholic ethnic neighborhoods against being wiped out? Where is there anywhere in the enormous body of Kennedy political statements as a family? I mean, my God, it would fill five libraries. Where is one statement about, we really, we're Irish, we're Catholic, and we are going to defend the people who want to live as Irish Catholics in America?
Yeah, where was...
Let their ethnic neighborhoods be shattered by, maniacs like Sergeant Shriver, who's one of our family members. I mean, you can see it's just preposterous.
Where was Senator Kennedy during the busing crisis in Boston in the 1970s?
Yeah, exactly. So you can see that, this is the problem, is that the ethnic neighborhood thinks there's representation. They think that, oh my God, there's the Kennedy, right? He's working for us. And so then when you have a traitor like the Kennedys, because that's how I see them, I think that they are Catholic with an asterisk. They are not sincere Catholics. This is just an identity aspect that they use for political control, right? To lead the opposition, basically, then the Catholics are more than defenseless. You see, they're being led in the wrong direction. They're being led against their interests because of treason, because of a traitor, a family of traitors that have taken political control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and at the same time promoting mass immigration from the third world.
And globalism, and so, we have to start realizing that the political dialectic is 100% distraction against genocide. We can't pay attention to any of it. Anyone who's participating in it, Trump, Hillary, the Kennedys, I mean, just forget about this. You need to try to create a new way of organizing.
It's very difficult because most people's understanding, their history 101 view of the world, the common Vic view of these events. How do you articulate? A good example is if you go after, if you're critical of something like the civil rights movement. The fact that it is indeed a movement means that it's already been co-opted, unfortunately.
Right.
And that all these leaders were bought and paid for. All the black leaders just embraced the culture of abortion and contraception. And there was that. This was once called the Negro Project by Margaret Sanger. The idea that at the same time. You have the Voting Rights Act. Great. Does voting really matter?
Yeah, but not when you don't have any choice as to who you're picking between.
Yeah, or when a few of you can go to college under affirmative action or these things. It doesn't matter if you're the illegitimacy rate from 1965, which the rate it was 25% when Moynihan declared it an emergency, the Moynihan report in the mid 60s, and now it's close to 80%. And no politician, Bobby Kennedy wasn't talking about this, no politician has talked about it since then from the left, is the importance of family cohesion, sexual morality, and conducting your personal life in a moral way, because that's ultimately going to, that's the biggest influence on how your life's going to turn out. But the political process doesn't address that. In fact, if anything, the policies they promoted are for moral degeneration.
Moynihan actually is interesting because I think he had the last reasonable political idea when he said that, look, what we should do is pay African American males money as post office. He had some government works project.
Yeah, it's like make him deliver mail twice a day. So jobs.
Then they'd be able to have families. They would be able to support a family, and the male would be a breadwinner and have dignity, and the family would be nuclear. Has some centrifugal energy that would basically keep it together.
It was basically his Catholicism.
It was, in fact, that would be a real application of real Catholicism, not like the Ed Kennedy, whoremongering, head of the SEC.
No, but the system says let's give them welfare, let's give them a Shaft and Superfly and let's promote gangs like the Blackstone Rangers. Thank you, Sergeant Shriver.
Yeah, exactly. So you have Moynihan on one hand and Sergeant Shriver on the other, and which one is connected into the deep state, so-called. So, it's we build out the schematic, Tim, one lifetime actor and one bad program at a time, and I hope that we can at least start to move the public away from, just automatically having positive thoughts about things, people like, Martin Luther King, JFK, and RFK, and start looking at them more analytically.
Yeah, yeah. And acknowledging what's really going on behind the curtains. So.
Yep.
So, okay, Joe.
Hey, Tim, it's been great fun, and we'll do it again next week.
Okay, enjoy your weekend.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.